You're listening to the Podcast with a K, available on iTunes, Stitcher.com, Audio Boom, and thepodcast.co.uk. And if you're listening, I'm so sorry. Or, you know, leave a review or something. Thanks.
It's the Podcast with a K. My name is Christian Corley. I'm joined by James McLean and Brian Turnover, the podcast co-host, and apparently a cockerel with a cough or a small dog. Which one is it?
I have no idea here.
No, James?
Maybe it's in your head.
It's not in my head. There's not enough space.
I think it might be.
Right, okay. And, okay. So we're here to discuss Doctor Who Series 9, Episode 11, the penultimate from this run, Heaven Sent, which starred Peter Capaldi in a giant, puzzly, prisony type thing. Before we get on to that, is everyone having a good weekend so far?
There's a visual cue there, because people can see us now, so they're getting my visual cue.
They're getting your visual cue. Okay, that's good. Yeah, and James, how's yours? James, have you been watching too many episodes of The X-Files? Is that why you're in the shade there?
He is the co-host who shall not be named. You know, he's in the Witness Protection Program right now, so if you could stop using his name, Christian, that'd be great, man.
What do we call him now?
Fred, I think we're going with. Or Ramon, I don't remember which one, but...
Eric?
I like Eric. Eric the half a bee. That's Eric one of the best things that Monty Python did.
It is, absolutely. And John Cleese singing as well, which is an
unusual
experience. Yeah. Hey, do you remember on Swap Shop, the guy that lived in the ceiling, he was called Eric as well?
I don't remember that. I was terrified of posh paws.
Were you terrified of posh paws, were you?
I was absolutely terrified of posh paws.
For those of you who, like Brian, may have no idea what James and I are talking about, the Swap Shop was a Saturday morning TV show. You're probably aware of it if you're a Doctor Who fan, because there's odd DVD extras that come from Swap Shop. There's one of Louise Jameson, isn't there, I think, and certainly one of Tom Baker, and maybe one of Liz Sladen as well. I think it started in 76 or 77, ended in 81, 82, 83 sort of time. It was hosted by Noel Edmonds, that famous beardy sweatshirt wearer.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it'll be available on the show notes. The show notes.
The show notes. Well, the guy that lived in the ceiling, I'm sure he didn't actually live there, I don't know, but they had some sort of gantry going on, and various things would be lowered down from the ceiling.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, such as a globe with postcards in for winners to get drawn out.
Yes.
Well, that guy was called Eric. Yeah.
Now I'm getting excited. Yes, I remember that. That's activated a memory. Oh, God, yes, it was transparent, and it was full of envelopes.
Yeah.
And you'd have to put a hand in the top. Was it in the bottom? I'm going to have to find a clip now to find that. That is really weird when you suddenly have something and be like, what's that? 35 years ago?
Yeah,
memory's been dormant in there until you just stirred it.
That's weird, isn't it, really?
Yes. That is a really weird... I mean, the funniest thing about Swap Shop, there's a clip, I think it's on one of the DVDs, as you say, it might be Doctor Who or Blake 7. It's one of those. And I always find it incredible, I think we might have said this before, when they sort of used to have their competitions and they'd read out the winner, they'd read out the exact address.
On air?
Yeah. This is Johnny Mills, age 7. He comes from 23 Roundtree Street, Sheffield, England, NR7. They give out the whole thing. And, you know, you just couldn't do that these days. But then they just give out children's entire addresses. And you just think, why did no one see that that might be not a good idea? And totally irrelevant. There was no need to do that. No one needed to know that address.
No.
Or obviously, Tom Baker or Paul Darrow, whoever was handling the competition, did, but no one else did. Well, they didn't, but at least, no. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we get the point. So anyway, Doctor Who, Series 9, Episode 11, Heaven Sent, which sees a doctor transported at the end of last week's episode into a prison. Or apparently of his own making, it would seem. And there's been a lot of exciting, encouraging things being said about this episode on the interwebs. And, you know, I'm not one for hyperboles or hyperboles. But see what I did there. Thank you. I am kind of the myself of the opinion that was a jolly storming episode and probably the most enjoyable Doctor Who that I've watched for a while, and I liked last week's as well. So I'm going to obviously, viewers, we've got a three joining there. You can tell us what you thought of the episode as well. By all means, leave your thoughts, tell us, prompt us, that kind of thing. Just interact with us in this kind of strange delayed thing that we have with the live podcast. So by all means, do that. James, how did you feel about Heaven Sent?
I don't know. How did you feel about Heaven Sent?
I've just told you.
Yeah, but you wouldn't make a book out of that, would you? I thought it was really good. It was better. Okay. It was the best I've seen for a while.
What did I think of Heaven Sent? I was absolutely gripped all the way through, apart from a 10-second bit when I started wondering. My mind was wondering, because that was when I started thinking, is it really happening? I had this is it really happening moment. But that was after I'd seen, like, the hand at the beginning. I thought, I wonder if that's the Doctor's hand. And then that kind, obviously, there's the thing with the washing, and as you go on, and the Doctor realises, and it becomes more obvious, and you realise, etc. So, yeah, you know, it was a 45, 50 minutes episode of Doctor Who, which I really, really think is the best thing Stephen Moffat has written in a very long time. There seems to be a working internal logic that some of his other, and you know, we I know we're going to end up talking about timey-wimeyness and Stephen Moffat's habit for doing this sort of time loopy stuff, but at the same time, so if it's done well, which I think this one was, then it's not really an issue. It's like Hinchcliffe with the macabre, the gothic-y stuff, isn't it? With some, we look back at them now and they're all well regarded. I still can't get away with Planet of Evil, you know, even now. So that one's, for me, is not a great one. So yeah, I'm, and Peter Capaldi was absolutely fantastic. He carried that episode on his own, along with whoever was dressed up in a sheet. Brilliant.
I guess I agree. I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was a very professional episode. I thought it was, I agree, back to sort of how he used to write for Davis, in the sense that it felt fresh. Mm. There was a lot of smart ideas in there, because a lot of the stuff he's done in his own era sort of kind of felt like variations on a theme.
Yeah.
And while this certainly did have that feeling of his work, in that sort of auteurish sense, I guess, it does... I must admit, I know we've said this 1,000 times before, if you have a great ending, you know, the rest can be rubbish. If the rest is great and you have a rubbish ending, it brings it down. The ending, the last 15 minutes, where I lost. I wasn't as interested as I was before. I still think it was great. I still think it was a very good story. I think his dialogue was really nice, or his monologues were brilliantly written. I thought some of the ideas in there were very smart. I thought the aesthetics were very strong. The production values was brilliant. I loved a lot of the little ideas in there. He didn't get too close to the Doctor Who continuity. He wasn't sort of playing around too much, but there were some nice ideas, like the internal TARDIS. And using Clara was really well, was nicely handled, this one. I just don't know. I mean, I kind of felt that when it got to the fact that the reveal was that he was going to have to bash through the wall using a billion versions of himself, it just sort of... it kind of just lost it a little for me, although I can understand why people still loved it. But for me personally, and I'm not saying there was anything wrong with that, it just lost a little bit of what it was doing. I think, I don't know whether it was because of the time factor on it, or whether it was the fact that now he has definitely established himself as the Doctor Who writer who has killed as many Doctors. I don't think anyone's going to top that. Yeah, well done. You know, he was doing pretty well already, but now he had to go the extra mile. But, yeah, and the Gallifrey thing at the end, well, we all saw it coming, so I suppose it wasn't too much of a shock. And I don't have this continuity wanky thrill that I'm seeing on Facebook about next week. I'll just take it as it comes. I think Gallifrey is a real hit-and-miss risky venture to go down. But So yeah, no, that was very, very good. I think what always bugs me a little is, and then BBC Radio Times picked up on this on their coverage of the episode, is when the whole notion of copying via teleportation. That I think probably is what hit it for me that I didn't like. I've always loathed that idea.
Right.
It is the breakdown of the original, and a new person is virtually created. Because I just don't think anyone would use teleports, ever. I think it'd just be a dead technology if that was the case.
Well, they become a dead technology in Doctor Who, don't they? Because there's the Ice Warriors? Or one of those where they've got the team at, and then several episodes later, that's set about hundreds of years later, they're not using team at all.
So maybe, yes, they just dropped it. But the whole idea of... I remember there was an episode... I mean, they've all done these sort of tropes as well. I remember Star Trek obviously did it with...
Riker.
With
Riker.
Riker,
they did it with Kirk. I was thinking of Kirk rather than Riker. But I've never quite liked it because I think there's a sort of unknown spiritual thing about me. But I kind of don't like this idea. And there's a book by... I can't remember which author it was. It might be James Bish, might not. Spock Must Die, I think it was called. It's one of those 70s novels which sort of did the new adventures things and sort of kept the series alive in a weird way in book form. And they sort of say it very matter-of-factly that, you know, you go into the teleporter, it kills you, and then a new version of you is created the other end. And this show sort of intimates that to a certain degree. And that, not totally, but it does a little, and that really just irritates me. I don't know why, but it just does. So there's just an internal logic to people that I just don't buy if that's what teleporters did.
Okay.
I can agree with that to an extent, because ordinarily, for instance, when it did happen in Star Trek with Riker, I thought, what an interesting idea. And it leaves you with a sense of which one is the actual real Riker. You know, and of course it comes down to they're both using the same body print, DNA, everything, like they're both the real one. But in this episode, when you find out that's what's going on with him, which I had figured out the moment that he found the skull that was plugged in to the machine.
You took your time.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't, the hand in the beginning I had completely forgot about, to be honest. I saw it happen and then I just completely forgot about it. And I think actually I probably put it together more so when he got his clothes. But the thing about his clothes, there's something annoying about that I'll talk about in a second. But the part that annoyed me about the teleporter thing is that, okay, well, so is the Doctor that leaves here and goes back to Gallifrey, is that just a copy of a copy of a copy kind of thing? Or is it, or do we take it as it's him? Like, I always hate that. It's a little bit different than what you were saying, because with me, it's kind of like, who are we left with here? You know, just a pattern that was in the buffer? Or the actual Doctor, you know?
It's the actual Doctor, isn't it? Because it's the actual Doctor... It's just generated every time, isn't it? It's the same Doctor that we saw leave in the end of the last episode, but right, he's been regenerated in the teleport machine, you know, billions of times.
Which means that every one of them is the real Doctor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, and the only other thing that kind of made that okay for me was the fact that, you know, while it took him billions of years to figure all this stuff out and break through that wall. We don't have another case of Moffat aging the Doctor for, like, thousands and thousands of years. You know, the Doctor that leaves that place only aged the amount of time that particular Doctor left that building. You know, so it could have been 8 weeks for him, something like that, and that's all he aged. So I was glad to see that, even though we had billions and billions of years and billions of skulls in that ocean.
I think it was four days.
Whichever it was, that's what I'm saying. Like it was only an aging cycle per Doctor. It wasn't that he leaves there and now he's 8 billion years old. You know.
Yeah.
I think also what irritated me a little about it is, and we've seen this done in a lot of time travel theories, and it's no way to prove it right or wrong, is the assertion that every time you would do something in the same situation, you would do it identically the same. The same parameters would create exactly the same results. And to be honest, I could imagine that being a truth. But that is also perhaps a little bit disturbing when you're watching it as a narrative, that there is a linearity to your life. That, you know, put yourself in the same situation a billion times, you would go through exactly the same processes to exactly the same result. Now, we could argue that there were times you didn't. But I think
we could. I'm sorry, James. I get what you're saying there, but I agree. But at the same time, every doctor that steps out of that portal is exactly the doctor as he left that haven that Ashilda had. You know, so I can see why he would go through all the motions identically, because essentially you're always replicating that person in that exact moment in reality.
But you're replicating every decision, every... Effectively, you'd have to be replicating every muscle movement, everything, because all you'd need is for your eye to catch something else. It could change your train of thought to what would be in the previous version. So it asserts that given... And it can do this, because the whole point of the castle was is that it reset totally exactly. So you could argue that all the environmental stimuli were exactly the same each time. So each time he would be within... If you consider life at its most simplistic, an action to a reaction, if all those are identical, maybe you could argue that you would do exactly the same thing every time. Which again is interesting and maybe a little disturbing. I don't know. But it was just the teleportation thing just bugged me a little. I mean, I don't know why it took him so long, because, you know, I had the same issue. I was there a couple of weeks ago. And what I found out, what you could do, is that you could find the shovel, hide behind the door, and then twat the really slow beast round the head until it was on the floor and you broke it. And then you could then use the shovel to sort of slowly... It took me a long time. I'm about 40 years older now. To actually dig around the crystal so you could get to the other side. But I don't know. I know he was having a bit of a stressful day with the death of Clara, but... Who knows? I'm obviously being facetious. I'm sure obviously there was no other way around to deal with that creature. But
it's funny to me that like you're hung up on this part, which is like a really important part. I agree with you. It's like it's like a real hang up. Like, why did he do the same things every time the same way? Whereas instead, I'm hung up on where did the second set of clothes come from at the fireplace? Because I can't fathom how there's, at one point in the story, a naked doctor running around, because that's the only way it could work, that there's a set of clothes still left there.
I think you've got to assume that somehow, I always got the assumption that there's a certain parameters within the castle which were set up to create, because that would be the only way it'd work, because this is where it breaks down. If the first time is different to the rest of the times, somehow, right, then that would assert that there is no linearity, that he could change, that different, I suppose, but then I suppose you'd say that there would be different stimuluses. So you'd have to say the first version, there are different stimuluses within the castle, environmental ones, which create a different situation, which result in the second one creating the loop, not the first one. So the first one somehow establishes a loop through a different narrative, which means that he's naked at one point.
Right, exactly. Well, this is what I'm saying. That's the only way it could work.
Do we not establish that it's the Doctor's confession dial at the end?
Yes.
So, this beyond the realms of possibility that his own confession dial should have his own clothes in it. But, just leave it there. Let's just snap into the comments that we've got from Brad. B-Festival, hi, Brad. He says, I really enjoyed the episode as well. I didn't think that I would like it, but I really got into it. I found it to be very engrossing. Peter Capaldi was great, and even the cameo appearance by Clara was a nice touch. In my opinion, the best episode of this season so far. I'm excited to see the next episode. We've also got Colin Grigson. Hey, guys. Hey, Colin. I really enjoyed Heaven Sent from the beginning. I wondered if it was going to be the Doctor who brought himself to the castle. I also wondered if Gallifrey was going to be involved somehow. I don't mind that I guessed these things, because I found it to be a really enjoyable episode. I'm in agreement with what you're saying about teleportation too. I just want to jump into that old chestnut of ratings, get it out of the way now, and can't find it. I believe I'm right in saying it was something like 4.5 million. With a slightly higher 20.9, and I can't find the link. So, yeah, 20.9, is that it? No, that's not it. 20.9%, which is a bit higher, which I know we're obviously we've got the later time scale and everything, time frame, I beg your pardon, schedule. But does seem to be there seems to be fewer people watching television in general this year than last year. So that's also worth in Doctor Who's favour. But again, we've got the whole schedule thing, and, you know, it's encouraging to see, and I don't know if I can't recall if we mentioned this last week, but it is encouraging to see that Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss have both mentioned that the schedule is a bit lunatic. So that's that. Brian, we haven't really had your thoughts on the episode as a whole, so where are you on that?
I really enjoyed it. I didn't know how it was going to go, just having a story with really just the Doctor, because I wasn't sure how you could sustain that for 45 minutes or so, but man, they did a really good job of it. And visuals, like all the CGI work, the setting, the creature, if you will, everything about all that I just really liked. I was really surprised, because the whole way through I was captivated. You know, I didn't really start to falter and think I should check my phone or do anything else. I was just really into it. And even though at the end I was left with a little bit of, you know, what did the episode actually do for our story to progress it along? Like, it didn't need to be 45 minutes of the Doctor by himself. It was okay, because they made it enjoyable. You know, it could have easily gone the opposite way of being the worst episode of just one guy wandering around talking to himself, but instead it really worked somehow. You know, like I said, I only had like minor little issues, which were the thing about the clothes, and I agreed with what James said. I thought the same thing. Like, how could you be sure the Doctor was going to go through all the same motions, especially since the first one by default has to be different? I did find certain aspects of it predictable, of course. I think we've all mentioned that. Like, everybody knew it was going to Gallifrey. But on the whole, yeah, I don't know. On the whole, I just really enjoyed it. I think it was the best of the season so far.
Okay.
Was it a bit odd that he had his sonic glasses the whole time and he only used them once? Given how it is, you know, an accepted and a fan-furious catch-all for any movement in a plot, that I know you could argue, well, there was very little mechanisms for it to work on, but we now know these days it don't need mechanisms.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised they kept them on him for that, I'm negative, but I did think it was very good.
I think the sonic glasses get a bit of or the sonic shades, or whatever you want to call them, do get a bit of a bad rep, because they do the same thing that the Sonic does, but there's none of all of this going on, and they do seem to be, there is less Sonicking going on in the Capaldi era than there was under Matt Smith and David Tennant.
He certainly seemed far more, I think, take away the companion and take away that silly need to be like Matt Smith and or David Tennant with the jokes. He came across far more like, and I hate saying this because it sounds like I'm being a classic fan, but he seemed far more like a classic Doctor. I could see far more Pertwee and Tom Baker in him.
Oh, yeah, I see that. I see that quite often, yeah. Can I just want to explain to anyone who's just joined us that, as you can see, I'm sat here as usual with my collection of Doctor Who books. A few hardware boxes there. And Brian is there. Hello, Brian, speak.
Speaking. Hello. That's me. That's not me, that's James.
That was Brian with his sonic screwdrivers. And then we've got James, who's under witness protection.
I am.
Yes. That's why we can't see him. In fact, he's even changed his name to Eric from Swap Shop.
Half a BT.
One for you older viewers there. Oh, hello, Zedro1000. In a way, would you do everything the same every time question is the free will question. If life is just chemicals acting in predictable ways, then nothing that ever happens is of our own choice.
I think a lot of next episode will define how you consider this one. If it was part of the confession dial, and the confession dial itself is just like a sub-reality, you can probably get away with anything. It becomes part of a process that you could even consider as linear as a digital device.
Okay.
I think maybe I'm just a little tired of, I'm going to be criticising again, of the character death trope within Stephen Moffat's era. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed that it fell back on it. I think that's what bugged me. Okay. And that's why I just thought, oh, here we are again. We're getting out of a plot device by breaking the rules, by breaking the conventions of drama, which is normally when you're dead, you're dead. And using that to do a very clever and very beautifully written and lovely production, direction and pacing and what he did. It really worked. I just think it's just the fact he's killed people so many times now that it just made that moment, oh, not again. And now we've got this whole thing, is he actually genuinely really dead? Is this a copy? Is it really? No, is there a soul thing here? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I agree that, you know, it's getting tiresome seeing characters die for no reason. You know, it would really be nice if they would just start writing in other things for them to overcome rather than death, because, you know, that's just so easy in real life to overcome. For me, one of the things actually that I just realized started to bug me that they were going to do, and then I quickly came around and was like, okay, and then we got to the end of the episode, and I was like, okay, a little bit bugged by it again, was, you know, the fact that the Doctor has to tell the truth in the story. And so when we got to why he left Gallifrey, I'm getting really sick of Moffat rewriting everything from the past, because we've talked about this before, the whole Quantum Leap situation where, you know, Sam Beckett starts traveling through time in other people's lives, essentially just by accident of a science experiment that he created. And then you get to the final episode of Quantum Leap, and yes, everybody, this is spoilers, but you probably had like over 30 years for this. It's God who's controlling him, you know? Okay, there you go. But, you know, and it's like, okay, do we really need God to be controlling Sam Beckett? Why did we need that? It was great before when it was an accident. He was just this nice guy that did the right thing, you know, sure enough to get himself home. But after a while, it was, I got to do the right thing. So here, having the Doctor leave Gallifrey, not because he was bored, I was like, oh, crap, where is he going to go with this? But when he had him say that he was afraid, I felt okay, because I remember the first and the second Doctor, their reactions to being caught by their own people. You know, or you know, at the Time Lords weren't mentioned, but the first Doctor was certainly frightened for what would happen to he and Susan, and the second Doctor was terrified to call them in the War Games, and I thought, okay, that's great. I can live with that. I think that's cool. But then you get to the end of the story, and you have the Doctor mention that he is the hybrid, and it was kind of like,
hold on. He didn't say he is the hybrid. He said, the hybrid is me.
Right, I'm sorry. There's a difference?
Well, there's a character called me.
Ah, fair point.
Yeah.
I forgot about that because it's such a stupid name, so there you go.
Yeah.
So, yes. So, if the hybrid is me, Ashilda, which I finally remembered her name, and then they give her a stupid name, then fine. But if it turns out to be the Doctor, then I don't like that aspect.
Well, if it is the Doctor, it's not new, is it? Because we've known...
The half-human thing?
Yeah. Excuse me, I'm chewing ice. It's really rude on a podcast. I do apologize. I just want to jump back to the comments, because Zedro1000 continued. When he said, then nothing ever happens is of our own choice, he then goes on, which is an appropriate phrase, which would mean...
Can you read that? I lost it. What?
Yeah, so Zedro1000, I read out his comment a couple of moments ago. In a way, the would you do everything the same every time question is the free will question. If life is just chemicals acting in predictable ways, then nothing that ever happens is of our own choice, ... which would mean that all our lives to date have been one long Christopher H. Bidmead episode.
Mm.
Yeah. So there you go. And Nick Caulfield's just come along there and said that Doctor says that me is the hybrid. Obviously, we're not going to find out until next week. And I have to say, I haven't been this excited for the next episode for a long time. Am I alone in this?
Yeah.
Okay.
I really enjoyed this episode, but as I am used to with Moffat, just because you had one good episode this week doesn't automatically mean the next week is going to be great. Because no. I loved the first part of the season finale last year, but I hated the actual season finale. So I'm waiting to be let down.
Okay. I'm looking at the scale, and I'm the same director as well, and the same writer. So obviously I've had the same thought as you, but my thought is looking at the previews, the scale of the finale, it's obviously of greater scale than last year's.
Yeah.
So it looks like there's a bit of kind of possibly a bit of tidying up in there, and we're also going to see some characters that we saw back in Day of the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm optimistic.
Yeah.
It cannot be as bad as Death in Heaven. So.
Well. It can, but I'm hoping it's not.
I think the problem is that it's obviously got the risk of being mythology-based, and it's the mythology stuff I don't like him dealing with particularly.
Hmm.
I didn't even think the way... The Day of the Doctor, I didn't think Gallifrey was anything particularly inspiring, especially when we said this at the time, that you'd had a End of Time suggesting this almost very fairy tale language of the various degradations of the and that were evolved, and it was just a straight battle of lasers. And it sort of took away some of the magic, which was odd because he, Moffat, is the king of fairy tales. He loves that sort of thing. And he sort of had this very linear battle, using linear again. I'm not really looking forward to next week's at all.
Okay, well, obviously we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know where it's set. We don't know when it's set. We don't know what's going to happen. So let's not go too much down on an episode until we've seen it.
This is a preview. And I didn't like the preview, so I got the right to say, at this moment, I am not that keen. I like this one, though. I mean, this is even though I didn't listen to the end, this one was good.
Okay.
This is what I was expecting out of Office Era.
Let's throw some numbers. Marks out of 10, for heaven's sake. Go on. I dare you.
I'm going to go to 9.
9?
Yeah.
Wow. James McLean gave Heaven's Sake 9 out of 10.
Despite grumbling for the last 30 minutes, but
Brian Terranova, dude.
Get ready to be shocked, because even those minor issues that I had can't stop me. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode, and I'm actually going to give it a 10. Because I just really found it that engaging, and I did, and I found very few issues with it that I couldn't easily reconcile.
Okay, well, I'm also giving it a 10. So it's almost...
Stephen Moffat, did you hear that?
Yeah, hey, Moff. Hey, yeah, we're talking to you.
That's right.
That was a 10. Heaven Sent is a 10. And we know you're listening, so. Well, he might not be anymore. He might not be anymore. He might think we're all dead or just given up podcasting, which is... thankfully, Philip Bates published something on a website called Casterbus. I don't know if you've heard of it. About our little podcast. I say he published it. I wrote it. But he put it up in his own name.
Nice.
Which is fair enough. He was a bit busy, bless him. And so I do think, I don't want to dwell on it or anything, because obviously we've moved on, but I do think that he and Andrew are doing a fantastic job editing the site. So we'll just leave that there. Well done, guys, for managing that. Listen, there's a few other things been going on that I just want to I don't want to gloss over them. I just want to go through them quite quickly. Sadly, we've lost Anthony Reed in the past couple of weeks, former Doctor Who script editor, and we've also sadly lost an actor of a character, one of Britain's great character actors, TV and theatre character actors, Kenneth Gilbert, who played Dunbar in Seed of Doom back in 75. He's sadly passed away. Sadie Miller has launched the Lethbridge Stewart 2016 range. So this is Elizabeth Sladen and Brian Miller's daughter. She's kind of given up acting for the time being anyway, since her mother passed away. And she's writing for the 2016 range of Lethbridge Stewart novels from Candy Jar, which is quite a... I don't think coup's the right word. It's just a fantastic little piece of news to have a new name involved in them. And so she's writing a story called Moonblink. There's also The Showstoppers by Jonathan Cooper and The Grandfather Infestation by John Peel. So that's really cool news. All of these links will be in the show notes, so you can catch up with them in your own time, dear listener or viewer. Hey, shall we just have a quick look at Sherlock, The Abominable Bride? A synopsis has been released by the BBC for this, which is due on New Year's Day. I dare say we'll be talking about it. Apparently there's been... James, am I right in thinking there's been reshoots on this?
I've not really been following Sherlock. Be interesting if there is.
I'm sure I heard that there has been reshoots, or certainly some re-edits. Possibly even of the scene that we saw that was released a few months ago, which we felt had a slightly OTT comedic tone to it. Peter Capaldi's down under at the moment. I don't know if you know of this. And he's been snapped at Bag End. And he seems to fit in quite well. He's also been snapped with Sylvester McCoy. But I think that was at the Doctor Who Festival. Was that last weekend? I think that was last weekend, wasn't it? Were you at a convention this weekend, Brian, or was it the weekend before?
The one before.
Right, so maybe the festival's that weekend as well. I'm confused. Or maybe it was just last one. And also, those skulls that we saw in Heaven Sent were Peter Capaldi's skull.
An approximation, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. Which is quite macabre. I quite like the idea that you can have a skull made of your own head.
Do you know, it's actually, when I saw it, like I said in that skull scene, and I put it together there, I had actually wondered if it was his skull, because I thought, you know...
Yeah.
I didn't think about the process that they actually used, which is essentially reversing things, taking a mold of his head and working backwards, like how a police forensic scientist would do with a skull and working forwards. I thought maybe they would have like gotten like an actual medical scan of him and seen his skull and sculpted a skull from there. I didn't realize how they reverse engineered, but I did think it was his because it did have that, you know, it had his shape, you know.
Yeah, I'm
impressed with that.
It is a little
creepy, but it was. I think it was pretty cool to go to that.
I'd like to have a skull of my own skull. I think.
There you go.
Right now I would anyway. Probably when it came to it, I probably wouldn't. The Doctor Who's going to feature on the Radio Times cover for the 5th to the 11th of December as well. So that's next week's issue, I think. Starting for the issue that starts from this coming Saturday, so for the season finale. And there's just one of that's right. The script for Face the Raven by Sarah Dollard is available online from the BBC Writers' Room in its slightly earlier form, so it's got a slightly different name of Trap Street. So that is pretty much that in terms of news that I wanted to talk about. Guys, we've got Russell on. We've got a dead Clara. Sorry, did I say Russell on? Sorry. We've got Gallifrey. We've got a dead Clara. We've got General Guy, played by Ken Bones, from Day of the Doctor. We've got the hybrid. We've got a Shilder in the finale. We've got a lot of stuff going on. We've also got an extra 15, 20 minutes in the episode next weekend, next Saturday night, and so my question is not how much are you looking forward to or anything like that, because you've kind of done that, etc., but what are you expecting the Christmas episodes to bring to what's just happened? Is it going to take Doctor in a complete new direction? Are we just going to have a big pause from what's just happened? Have we lost Clara completely? Probably, because obviously we've got River Song at the Christmas episode. And Jenna Coleman's obviously busy with another show, so she's probably not coming back to Doctor Who. Hit me. What do you think?
Well, I, for one, hope we've lost Clara completely, because I would like to actually see one of her exits actually be final. Nothing against her. I think she's lovely, but, you know, you can't keep coming back, because then people will start not liking you, I think. Because you'd be overstaying your welcome in some ways, which I feel they did already with her. But the Christmas episode, what I'm hoping for is a break from, as James had rightly put, the mythology. I would really just like to see an episode where it's just, you know, maybe just a classic romp, just a fun adventure. You know, the Doctor and Fine River's there, you know, hopefully it'll be fun. I don't want to see them pick up where the season finale left off, except maybe emotionally for the Doctor, I'm sure you'd have to go there. I would just like to see a story of its own that can be enjoyed on its own that you don't need 15 other episodes to have seen to understand it. That's
okay.
What I want. Just something fun for Christmas Day.
Before James says anything, you said no mythology. I do want a piece of mythology. I want the Doctor to give her that bloody sonic screwdriver.
You know, I thought of that too. I thought that would be great because then, you know, River would just be leaving and going off to her death and her story would be wrapped up. But at the same time, I don't really care enough anymore. You know, I liked the fact that she wasn't there. I liked how they ended things, and I to be honest, I loved the fact that her story was really wrapped up in the 10th and 11th Doctor's lives. I thought that was great. So now that they're bringing her back for Capaldi, I just thought, why? You know, man, you had like a great package, like this character who supposedly knows everything about him, but really had only met these two. I just thought it was great. But then, I also felt like Matt Smith, because one of his things to Stephen Moffat was, please don't use River Song, leave her for me. And I thought, what a disrespectful thing to do to an actor who actually made a nice request to you, you know? So I'm with Matt. I kind of wish that she wasn't in the story, because I thought her story worked well as it was.
Okay, James?
I don't know. I'm looking forward to YouTube Christmas, where there will be a version out there which will have all the River Song bits edited out, and I can watch it without being frustrated. I don't know. I want it gone. I mean, Brian, I was mentioning this in an email, that there was an interview, wasn't there, recently? It was an interview with Moffat, wasn't it, where he sort of said, that he thought that it was going to be his last one.
Yeah.
Christmas. Yeah. Which will make it interesting, because you might find it has a Journey's End feel to it, where it feels like it's a wrap-up, even though inevitably it's not his last. By the sounds of it, politics have changed and he's on for next season. So he's got more to do. So I reckon it will have a sort of fairly rappy feel to it. It will. I'm hoping it will finish off Riversong's story totally on that basis, that if he thought that was going to be his last episode, this would definitely be the end of her, even though we've seen the end of her. I don't care about the screwdriver. I presume that there was a long period where we didn't see that meant were her and Matt Smith were meant to be sort of cavorting around the universe. So I presume she got it then.
Well, you know, there is on one of the Blu-ray sets, I think it's from season 6, could be 7, but I think it's 6, where there's a short story, a short scene that is exclusive to the DVD Blu-ray sets, where Matt and River are basically on a journey somewhere, and then they enter the TARDIS, but they find out it's the wrong TARDIS. They're in another version of the Doctor's TARDIS, so it's another Matt and River in that TARDIS as well. So the two Matts have a conversation, basically, and or River is in it somehow, I don't remember, but they talk about how they were going to the Singing Towers of Darillum, I guess is how you pronounce that. And and the Doctor just has this look on his face, the one that's with the River going to those towers, like they both know it's the last time they're going to see her, because that's where River mentions him showing up with a new haircut and giving her the sonic screwdriver, and then she's on her way to the library and never sees him again. So they already technically dealt with it, which is why I was really kind of, you know, upset that we're seeing her again with Capaldi, because we already technically had it, but since it was never broadcast, it was just on a DVD, it's easy to ignore, I guess. Mm. But I liked it. I liked that they covered their bases there, because they already had the setup. He and River were going there, he was going to give her the sonic, and then that was sort of the end of her story.
Okay. We'll see what happens with that. Listen, you know, we've talked a few times about there being too much stuff, haven't we?
Stuff,
yeah. Say, in the past, there was, you know, there was no Doctor Who for a bit, wasn't there? And when there was Doctor Who, it was just like a novel a month or whatever. There's a great interview in the latest Doctor Who magazine. Be careful of that cover, it's a spoiler, possibly. And there's Bertha Rhys-Smith, and Matt Gatiss, in which basically Gatiss is talking about the One Doctor, the Big Finish play, and they land at the end of time when everything has been done, everything is exhausted culturally, there's nothing left, and this man is trading off the Doctor's reputation. Matt Gatiss says, "I sort of feel like we're there. I feel there's a sort of exhaustion, I think, at the moment, culturally." Shearsmith agrees with him, and you know, Gatiss goes on, "It sounds like we're ungrateful that we're biting the hand that feeds us, but look, I remember the days when we get Dennis Fisher sidemen with noses. It was like, why can't you get it right? Now you can go to Forbidden Planet and get the scale model of Jamie McCrimmon for £700. It's kind of like, be careful what you wish for." Shearsmith says, "We've lost the novelty of not knowing, haven't we? Now you can have half an idea of a forgotten memory, and within a minute it's on YouTube." And do you know, this is something that we kind of touched on in the podcast, isn't it, in the past, that there's a lot of product with everything. So it's interesting to see people that are involved in one of the everythings that we talk about, that they recognise it as well, I feel.
No, all they recognise is that they're getting old, because that's the sort of thing that only old people say.
Okay.
It is essentially, let's truncate it down to, things aren't like they used to be anymore. Things are just not as good as they were. And even if it's down to the fact that there's too much, I mean, God, you know, I used to like it when all I had was a book and a potato to eat. But then along came cookers and microwaves and I could eat loads of things. Or, oh God, you know, I used to only got to read the newspaper and then TV came along and then there was a news every day. I watched that. I didn't have to get it. I could read what I read on the newspaper and see it on the news. It's just the same perpetual load of dull balls. To be quite frank,
was he finished?
I think that's the definitive word there, right?
Thank you, James. Let's go back to the comments. Colin Grigson. After watching episodes like this, I always ask myself, why can't Doctor Who always be this good, or at least be on a more professional level like this? Are you guys the same? Speaking personally, yes. James?
Well, I mean, the thing is you don't have to actually go and buy all this stuff either. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there, but in the end, you know, no one's forcing you to have to go and buy the £700 full-scale replica of Fraser Hines. I didn't even know it existed. I didn't even know Fraser Hines still existed until I got into Big Finish. You know, you don't have to do all this sort of thing.
No, but what about what Colin just said?
You'd have to repeat that. I wasn't listening.
Oh, that's okay. He said, after watching...
I think it's all right. I think, again, as we've said, if he actually sort of dropped the Sherlock, if only... if he dropped Sherlock and actually focused, I think he could do this sort of thing regularly, quite frankly. Yeah. I still think he is overburdened. I don't, and I'm sorry if he does listen to this, I think he's a great writer. I don't think... Well, he never trained, as far as I'm aware, as a producer. And I've seen, given how Russell T. Davis, who'd had a lot of producing experience before Doctor Who, found that it slowly wore him down after 4 years, I would be very surprised if someone who was really, this was their first major production role, would not be finding it hard to balance out top quality writing.
Well, there was Jekyll, wasn't there? Was it Jekyll? It was called Jekyll, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Jekyll.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was an exec on that. But I mean, I'm not, obviously by saying he was an exec on that, yeah. I'm not contradicting what you said about training as a producer. I just wanted to point out.
No, that. I was saying, well, Nathan Turner wasn't just an exec. I mean, not Nathan Turner. Rusty Davis. He was actually working as a producer. So okay. Again, I'm not trying to sort of pair them up, sort of, you know, fight which is the best producer. I'm just saying that one who'd spent a lot of time working solely as a producer found Doctor Who hard to balance out writing and production.
Something's just hit me.
Yeah?
Harry Hill's TV burp. You just said something there about not wanting to have a best producer fight. Would that have been a fantastic... You know, every commercial break on Harry Hill's TV burp, you would say, I like so-and-so, I also like so-and-so. But which one's best? There's only one way to find out. Well, it'd be brilliant if he'd had, like, an 8-foot Russell T. Davies stumbling through this door, and then this little wiry-haired guy, about 4 foot, like a Sontaran, coming in the other door, and the two of them fighting like that. Well, maybe in my mind it would have been. Sorry, I've interrupted you, James. I do apologise.
There we go. So, if he was a little more... I mean, if he was a little more focused on one show, I think you just get the top stuff, which is why I think Moffat's stuff in the Russell T. Davies era was some of the best new series Doctor Who.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Zedro 1000, is that... Do I know who Zedro 1000... I think we know who Zedro 1000 is. I think that might be Steve. Herbert. Doc Hume. And if it's not, then please set us straight. Wistful sighs aren't what they used to be. Don't know what that means, but there you go. Listen, has anyone watched Jessica Jones yet?
I've watched 2 episodes so far.
Okay, can you give me... I don't want to say recommendation. Yeah. Can you give... Should I have started watching it yet?
What I've seen, I've liked. I'm going to be honest and say that some of it is rough for me, and the reason I say that is because do you remember when I was at your house and we watched Taken with Carrie? Not you, James. Carrie talked about how basically when
I'm trying to remember a film that we watched 5 years ago.
Yes.
Vaguely.
You'll get it. You'll get it. Remember how Carrie felt about like somebody stole his daughter, and all she could think was like she pictured, you know, her nieces or her sister, and you know, with her kung fu, she wanted to go kick their ass and so on. You know, it just agitated her so much. You know, that's how I feel whenever I see essentially rape being depicted on film. I just want to kill that actor. I don't care if they're an actor or not. I just it irritates me so much. Like it really makes my blood boil. And while they don't go to the point in this show of actually showing the physical act, what they have done is basically with Purple Man. That's essentially what he is to me. He's like, not only is he evil, but he's a rapist. And it's like, so I'm trying to watch. I'm trying to get into it, but it's a main central plot, because it's something that had happened to the lead character, Jessica Jones, and what happens to other characters, and she's trying to stop it. So I get it, because it's got a great message going for it, but that was something so far that made it a tad difficult. I guess maybe a little bit more difficult with Tennant playing that character, but I got to tell you, the short bit that you get to see him so far in the first two episodes, he is creepy as hell. He's very good. They're done well. They're done kind of like how Daredevil was, so it's on that same kind of dark level. It's shot really well. It's acted really well, and they're good stories. I just was having a bit of a personal issue with that kind of aspect of it, but I'm still going to finish it out.
Okay, okay. That gentleman says that he is Doc Hume. I've also given away his secret identity, so sorry about that. Okay, so thank you for that. Well, I'm going to check it out anyway. Also, I've heard that The Man in the High Castle is quite good as well. Has anyone seen that yet?
I haven't seen that yet, no. Okay. It does look interesting.
You know what I saw?
What did you see?
I saw on YouTube someone who had done a remastered sort of version of Dimensions in Time.
What?
Really?
Well, what he'd done, basically, he'd added some extra bits of sound from the original, from Murray Gold's music. He'd played a little with some of the light effects, and then he had he'd cut out some of the less funny, very funny bits. And it worked a lot better. I will throw the clip, it's not a clip, it's the whole thing, Christian's way, and we'll put it in the show notes.
Yes, you say he removed the funny bits.
Well, there's bits like when Romana gets pulled into the Vic and they say, I've seen people thrown out of the Vic but not pulled in. That's cut out.
And right, okay. That's good.
So yeah. Things like that are removed. There's a couple of things taken out of order. But one thing I did notice, and this I thought was particularly really interesting, and I'm sure other people have said this as well, but I don't care because they're just geeks and I'm not. I'm Morph. Don't you know, do anything with me because I'm Morph.
Yep, we get it.
Was it the Doctor in that? He could be the Doctor from Day of the Doctor. The Fourth Doctor in that. You idiots.
The Curator.
Yes.
Yes.
That's the man. That could be him calling back to his past selves. Yeah?
Right, okay.
Well, I've been waiting to say that for so long.
But this is going somewhere.
Yeah, I'm slightly confused now.
There is a Tom Baker's Doctor. They couldn't disguise the fact he's looking a little old and he no longer had his curly hair. He just wears his Legopolis outfit and a hat, which makes him look a little like the Curator from Day of the Doctor.
Right.
Got that bit.
So they could be the same character, retrospectively, giving greater reason to give Dimensions in Time back the continuity it deserves, given it has the production number. And Wikipedia can stop putting it as being something which isn't canon just because people don't like it. Because you see, there's a lot of Doctor Who that I don't like Planet of the Dead. Don't see me saying it's not canon, do I? No.
We should do more of these Morph rants on Doctor Who podcasts.
Kill the Moon? Kill the Moon? Dimensions in Time. Kill the Moon? Dimensions in Time. Which is the best? Which one should be canon, eh? Which one has more relevancy? One of them has all the Doctors, Bessie, and a host of menagerie, and it actually depicts 2013 pretty damn well, to be fair. The other has an egg that's the moon.
Hey, Brian, you know, watching Kill the Moon, I'm always relieved we didn't do that other Time Leech plot, which had the moon as actually a giant spaceship with Daleks inside.
Yes, I think that was a good call to not do that.
Yeah, indeed.
Or else people would have hated us as much as that story.
Maybe so. Listen, we've been chatting for nearly an hour, and there's a lot of stuff coming up in the near future. And you know, I've gone through the news and stuff, so you check the show notes below on the website. If you're on Audio Boom, head to the website to pick up your show notes there. If you're watching on YouTube, I might put show notes in for a change. I haven't before, but there's no reason why I shouldn't really, because that description box is quite big, so I could do that. But what I want to do is just, because we've been talking about Doctor Who, and we're going to be talking about Doctor Who next week. After that, we might not be talking about Doctor Who quite so much for a few weeks. So, just to make you guys aware of that, not James and Brian, because they know, obviously, they're part of the plan, as it were. But, our Doctor Who content is going to kind of, when Doctor Who's not on air, we're going to talk less about Doctor Who than we do when it is on air. Now, this will have a manifold effect, mainly that we won't be struggling for ideas to talk about Doctor Who, like the time when we discussed the different colours of the companion's tights throughout the 1970s. Now, that didn't actually happen, but it might have done, you know, because we did get at one point between series 7 and 8, or between Day of the Doctor and, between Time of the Doctor and Series 8 style, we did get really desperate for ideas at one point. So we're going to get away from that. And there might be one or two new kind of podcast topics popping up. And in fact, I'm going to be republishing a trio of old interviews as well. There's one with Dean Wilkinson, BAFTA-winning video game and TV scriptwriter. One with John Guiler and Tim Follin about Contradiction. And the one with the guy whose name escapes me, who's involved with the producing a new version of The Saint. They were initially on Casterbus as cult casts. They were on Cult Britannia before that, and they're going to be uploaded into thepodcast.co.uk shortly, so you'll be able to view them, listen to them, and you'll be able to catch them on Audiobeam as well. They are a bit archivey, but there you go. That's pretty much all I've got to say on that. They're a bit archivey, but they're still relevant and interesting. We will be, obviously, we've got 9 views, and we'd like to thank you all for joining us this week on the podcast with a K. And if there's any more comments, now's the time to place them. I just want to pop into Twitter, and yes, we have got a couple. First of all, Luke Holsall, hello Luke, as ever. 55 minutes of just Capaldi, and I was glued from beginning to end, so excited for next week. Might need to watch it again now. I think that was straight after the episode, so better than watching The X-Factor, I suppose. Gib, Doctor Who Dan, says, enjoyed having sent Capaldi, great, kept me hooked, but a lot of guff and padding. Guessed it was Dial. Too macabre for kids. Skull pits. Yeah, that's quite scary, actually, if you're only small. And Podcast with K, he also says, also, can Moffat please stop rewriting Origins of Doctor Who? Do something new.
Amen to that.
Possibly a good place to leave it, then. We will be back next week discussing Hellbent and the ramifications and implications of that, and whether we enjoyed it or not. I just want to give you a wee recommendation. Nothing heavy, nothing serious. If you've got a copy, it's always worth giving this a read, because it's laugh-out-loud funny. Who on earth is Tom Baker? I've actually got I may have shown you this before, guys. I've got an autograph in the front there from the great man himself. For Chris and Claire, happy times, Tom Baker, Doctor Who 4, 1997. That's actually an ex-girlfriend of mine, and she wasn't supposed to be involved in that autograph. But Tom Baker beckoned her over, says is the young lady involved in this, and I said, yes, that's Claire with an E. Because, as you know, there are so many spellings of Claire that don't have an E. There you go. So, dear viewer, dear listener, until next time, it's a big goodbye from us, and we'll be chatting Hellbent next week. Goodbye.